Well, joining me now on the phone is Republican State Representative David McSweeney from Barrington Hills. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick, and the Hawks preseason starts next week.
I kind of like this blending of the, you know, the Cubs. Now we know they're going to have some, at least some postseason, hopefully a lot of postseason.
Right.
And then we roll right into the Blackhawks season. And I've been watching a little bit of that World Cup tournament, by the way. Don't be fooled. But hopefully that kind of takes us out of our dependence on the Bears.
Well, this is going to be a tough year for the Bears, but I think the Hawks and the Cubs, it should be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough year for the Blackhawks, too. We shouldn't forget that as well. Representative, I wanted to talk kind of in a grand overview about the stakes in the legislative elections on November 8th. And, yes, we know that, about 60% of those races for the 118 House seats and the 40 Senate seats that are on the ballot this time, 60% of those are basically non-competitive. But nevertheless, there's a lot at stake in this election.
Oh, there sure is. In fact, the election on November 8th will decide, I think, the direction that we're going to head in this state. You know, the governor has invested a great deal of money. It's at $20 million as of Friday night. The unions have come in from all over the country to support the Democrats. So there are at least, Rick, 10 competitive races. And as you know, right now it's 71 to 47. The Democrats have a supermajority. We need one seat, and it's just imperative that we at least pick up one seat to break that supermajority in the House.
When you look at the fact that you mentioned this, the governor's personal investment into these legislative races, and you know, you do have, obviously, this is the first time that Republicans have the financial resources, in my memory, to compete with the union and trial lawyer resources that the Democrats have. But that having been said, it's primarily a one-person funding source.
The governor has provided, through his campaign, a great deal of resources so that we're competitive this election cycle, and it's going to be a very, very interesting year. We obviously have the presidential race on top, so you'll have a greater turnout. And then, as I said, you probably have, you know, about 10 competitive seats. I think we're going to pick up one seat for sure. Jack Franks, who has been a frequent guest on your show, is running for McHenry County Board. We should pick up that seat.
That's a very, very Republican-leaning district.
It is. So I'm going to call that one right now for us. But then there are about 9 other races that are really just on the bubbles, too close to call.
And you know, everybody points to that November 8th as where do we go from here? And even with that, though, and regardless of which side may pick up seats, I'm not real confident that we're going to get anywhere, that that's going to change anything. Do you think it will?
I understand that concern, and I have the same issue. Right now, the budget deficit is increasing every day. You know, the stopgap has proven to be a failure. The deficit is now projected to be $8 billion, and that was before the change in the pension assumption. So $8.5 billion deficit, and we're not funding some of our basic social services, and people are talking about a massive tax increase. We actually, Rick, you know, even though it's political season, should be in Springfield working on a budget, because just because we have this stopgap doesn't mean everything's great. It means that the deficit is increased and we're still not funding some basic social services.
Well, and that's one of the things I'm concerned about. And as we said before, that the stopgap was kind of viewed as, on both sides, everybody kind of taking a time out. We'll let everybody go do their electioneering, their campaigning, and then we'll see what's left after the dust settles November 8th. But there really isn't anything going on as far as trying to find a direction for the future of the budget and the future for the state's finances right now.
Well, to put in context, the unpaid bills number, that's not debt. That's like, you know, unpaid credit card bill, is $8.7 billion. And that's supposed to grow to $14 billion. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, a lame duck session and some grand bargain. I don't see it. I really don't. And I never, Rick, could explain to my constituents why the state would raise taxes when we as legislators have created the problem by not passing the budget. Just to put it in context again, is the budget deficit, the unpaid bill number was $3 billion. Now it's $8.7 billion. The budget deficit last year was forecast at $4 billion. Now it's forecast at $8 billion. That means that we continue, and the two big items are really pensions and Medicaid that are out of control, and there have been no reform. So there's no way this tax increase talk really has become a self-fulfilling prophecy. People said about a year and a half ago, well, we're going to have a tax increase, and then we didn't do anything about spending, so now the bills continue to pile up. So it is a fiasco, and the stopgap has been one of the worst failures that I've seen in Springfield, and the deficit continues to increase every day.
I do have to say, though, I do sense some reticence to do a lame duck kind of tax increase after, you know, in kind of the way it was done in 2011. I don't get that sense that particularly Democratic legislators want to go through that exercise in a lame duck session.
Well, I hope you're right, and because I think a major tax increase would be a disaster for families and small businesses. But one of the other things that's already started, and we're not even through November 8th, is there's already talk about a gubernatorial election. So if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, the Democrats in 18 will be on the defensive. So I doubt that many of them will want to vote for a tax increase, meaning the rank and file. Certainly the Democratic leadership would support a tax increase, but I don't think it would be easy to get 60 votes in the House for a tax increase.
We're speaking with Dave McSweeney, State Representative Republican from Barrington Hills. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this bright and sunny Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson, joined on the phone with Dave McSweeney, State Representative, Republican from Barrington Hills. We're talking about the stakes, the big stakes that exist in the November 8th election. And Representative, you've talked before about your adamant opposition for a tax increase. And obviously, we've been discussing how the debt is, the budget deficit just keeps growing here. Are you still of that belief that we can get by without a tax increase, and also your remedy for trying to do something with the pensions?
Yeah, I think one thing we know for sure, Rick, is that we have to address the pension and Medicaid issue. That's where the spending increase. And I think we still can avoid a tax increase. But again, because we're not doing our jobs and we're not adopting a budget, the deficit is increasing every day. So on the pensions, two parts of it. Number one is President Cullerton, I think, has a good proposal, which I believe is constitutional, which gives workers a choice of having their future salary increases counted toward calculating their pensions. And if they want that, they have to accept a lower cost of living adjustment. That's where the real problem is in the cost of living adjustment, which is growing at 3% compounded per year. And then the second part of it, and the Supreme Court has clearly said that it is constitutional, is I think we have to restructure or reamortize the pension debt. We, in 1995, adopted a schedule that is arbitrary. It's a 40-year schedule that I think we can actually right now restructure. So the combination on pensions and then on Medicaid, we need to protect the truly needy, but we need to fight for more federal money. We need to go for more federal waivers. We need to reduce the payments that are in the system, and we also need to accelerate moving people to the HMOs. But again, the most frustrating part of what's happening now in the state is, as I'll say again, because we passed that stopgap, which is a total failure, because we're not addressing the spending side, the problem's becoming worse. But you have to address pensions and you have to address Medicaid, and we haven't done any of that for years.
On that pension proposal, which, of course, we really haven't seen, we know kind of a framework, but we haven't seen any language. But you know, one of the questions being that even with those changes and the offering of, quote, consideration in that way, the legal kind of theory, but even doing that, whether in offering a choice, if workers don't have to be offered the choice that says, I want what I have right now. And there's some question about whether that also has to be part of the consideration.
Well, the good news on the consideration theory is that in the ruling by the Supreme Court in the Chicago pensions, where they struck down the law, they did offer a little bit more optimistic vision, I think, on
a little guidance, as it were.
A little guidance, just a little. Which I is positive. So it's not a slam dunk. I agree, but we have to try, and that's where the growth is. Really, these cost of living adjustments, and it continues to again literally increase every day that we don't address it.
But at the same time, that we're going to have it will go to be litigation. I mean, it will definitely go to litigation, and you know that can take some time.
It could actually take up to 18 months. That's why I believe you have to combine that with restructuring the pension debt, that schedule, that amortization schedule. That has to be a part of it because you would not be able to realize immediate savings on the pensions. You'd have to wait 12 to 18 months to actually include those savings. If we had adopted the Cullerton model even after the Chicago ruling, you know, we'd be 3 to 6 months into it right now. Instead, we haven't even started. That's the most frustrating part.
And I wanted to ask you, too, there was the issue of a rate of return, a return on investment, and which has been topical lately. And we had the recent decision by the teachers' retirement system to reduce the annualized expectation for rate of return from 7.5% to 7%. And this was a move that the governor's office was actually opposed to, which also would seem to run counter to his repeated warnings that you can't keep kicking the can down the road. And, you know, we know, as a matter of fact, that return on investment by pension systems is going to be lower than ever. And, in fact, if you want to be realistic about it, even probably 3%. Return on investment is optimistic these days. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I support a complete reamortization of the pension schedule, and combined with that, you know, reevaluating the rate of returns. I mean, Moody's, the rating agency, looks at about a 5.5% rate of return. So our liabilities are much greater than they are. But the problem I have, and I think the governor's office had, is the way that they did that. I mean, it just came on the agenda, you know, on a Friday morning, and they voted on it. So I think a combination of restructuring the pension debt schedule, doing President Cullerton's pension proposal, and redoing the assumptions on rate of return, doing everything at once is the way to do it. My issue, and I think the governor's office issue, is that they did this thing without a lot of public notice and just as an isolated event, as opposed to combining it with a fundamental reform of pensions.
And, of course, there's a tremendous cost involved in that as well by lowering that assumption.
About another $485 million. So the $8 billion number that was created by this stopgap measure, that deficit now is $8.5 billion for the current fiscal year, and it's growing every day.
Yeah, and I mean, and obviously we know that pensions are eating up an ever-increasing amount of the, unobligated money is now becoming obligated. And, of course, the continued questions about that shortchanges funding for other types of services. But at the same time, you know, you do have the union saying that, you know, this is a guarantee, this was a promise, and we have the court rulings as well. And it creates this uncertainty that exists out there.
Well, it does, but that's why we need to keep addressing it until we get it right, Rick. I mean, there's no way that we can go on like this without, you know, addressing the pension issue. You said it's crowding out basic social services. We're still not funding some of the social, you know, service contracts for, you know, the needy, and that's an absolute disgrace. You know, the stopgap measure picked winners and losers, and we also have a situation that we're not fully funding, you know, higher education. You've seen your Tribune has written articles about what's going on at universities with the declining enrollment. I mean, it's an absolute disgrace. And then I pick up the paper the other morning, and I see they're paying $600,000 to get rid of the Chicago State University president. It's another outrage. I mean, when kids are being forced to leave school and they're paying out $600,000 severance contracts, this state is just in a total mess at this point, and we just need fundamental change.
Representative, I'm not sure we can make it till November 8th. I really have days like that. Dave McSweeney, State Representative Republican from Barrington Hills, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.